tonight. We may have a similar problem tonight. Evidently, we discovered the hard way that the recording didn't come out last week completely. I suspect it has something to do with faulty batteries, and I'm not convinced that we're going to have the same problem tonight because they're the same batteries. So we'll have to get that addressed for next week. So if anybody else has a problem with the recording, if it happens to come up, please let me know. We are starting number two. So if anybody hasn't gotten the handout yet, please make sure that you get a copy of our new handout. We seem to have lost a few people along the way. It's the weather, I think. Well, summer in Israel, and for others it's the weather, and for others it's other things.
Everybody have one?
This is the new one.
That's last week. No, this is the new one.
It's a new one.
We are ready to move forward.
Thank you.
Okay. In our last episode, in order to bring everybody back onto the same page and a little bit of a review, let me just briefly review the thesis with which we left off, because it's a thesis that's going to be important for our understanding of all of the future first part of the principles that the Rambam lays down, and that is that the Rambam, like all philosophers, found it difficult to impossible to define God in positive terms, in absolute terms. And so he uses what I call a negative definition, what God is not. In other words, to define God in a frame of reference in positive terms, in the context where we have no frame of reference with which to describe him, is impossible. We live in a finite world, and to use finite descriptions to describe that which is by definition infinite and beyond the finite is not conceivable. But what the Rambam does is he uses a frame of reference which is relevant to our perspective. We perceive, we have a relationship with God, and therefore we perceive, in a sense, his footprints in this world, and it is through those footprints, through that impact, through that relationship, that we develop that trust and connection to God of which we spoke in the earlier shiur. That essentially is where the link between the Rambam's description of God as creator and the Kuzari's description of God as redeemer interconnect. For the Kuzari, the beginning of that relationship starts with the redemption of Israel. That's where our relationship with God begins, and therefore that's how he starts the process of understanding or relating to God. The Rambam takes that one step further to creation, but from the same perspective, namely, where does the relationship with God begin, if not necessarily with the Jewish people, but certainly with all of the world, with humankind, with the world as existence as a whole. Our relationship with God begins at the moment of creation. So even though the Rambam starts from creation, he's not doing so because he's attempting to define God. God is undefinable. Even the word creator is not a definition of God as much as a reflection of one manifestation of God's interrelationship with the world. That relationship being through the creation. That's essentially the conclusion we came to at the end of the shiur last week. And I just want to draw your attention briefly. I don't suppose anybody happens to have two AA batteries in their pocket. No AA batteries in the pockets. All right, we're going to have the same. Mike, thank you for. We're going to have the same problem. All right, we are going to have a problem.
Make a phone call?
It'll last another 5 minutes and then it'll be gone. I want to draw your attention to the Yigdal for a moment as sort of a bridge between last week's shiur and tonight's shiur, even though the Rambam did not write Yigdal. and I want to make this very clear, the Rambam did not write Yigdal. Whoever, Yigdal was written much, much, much later. Excuse me? From where? No, don't run home and come back. No. It's more important that you hear this year. You're here. Yeah. I want to draw your attention to the Yigdal, because I think when after we finish looking at each principle, if we go back to the Yigdal, it's an interesting exercise. Number one, we say the Yigdal every week, so it's something we are familiar with. And it's supposed to reflect the 13 principles of faith. On the other hand, once we start a deeper understanding of these principles one by one, I think we'll find some issues related to how the author of Yigdal presents the principles there. I think that there's a lot of poetic license taken, and you'll see that right away. The first principle, the first line of Yigdal, which is to reflect the first principle, is Yigdal Elokim Chai V'Yishtabach. Great be the living God, and may He be blessed. Which is, I guess, just a general introduction. The Rambam speaks of none of that. Nimtza, He exists. V'en et el mitziuto, and there is no time with regards to the existence of God. Of this first line, how much of this is actually in the first principle of the Rambam? Which word in this sentence is actually a reflection of the Rambam's first principle?
Nimtza.
And that's about it. The Rambam's first principle says God exists. And that's all it says. The Creator exists. And it says much more than that, actually. It says that we are obligated to trust in this Creator, to have a relationship with this Creator. We have to engage the relationship, reciprocity. None of that is in the Yigdal. The notion of Ein Eit, that God is outside of the realm of time, is not relevant to the first principle. It is something that the Rambam will talk about. He will talk about it in principle number four. Not principle number one, and there's no reference to either Yigdal or Yishtabach to any kind of praise of God. The first principle simply states that God exists and we are obligated to enter into a trusting relationship with God. So I always find it interesting. We say the Yigdal every week, and we assume that it's a reflection of the Rambam's 13 principles. It's not exactly true. What is more accurate, although not completely, is the Ani Ma'amin. Remember that the Ani Ma'amin is also a list of the Rambam's 13 principles of faith, also not penned by the Rambam, but at least there the phraseology is closer to what we have.
Well, he does say have already as well.
Where? Okay, I will grant Yisbarach. Yisbarach is different from Yigdal and Yishtabach. And the reason they're different, even though we say them together in the Kaddish, Yisbarach is an expression in the Middle Ages. Anytime they referred to God, they always added Yisbarach as just an expression.
But so actually, it says Yishtabach in the parish that you gave us.
Does it? Where? I could be mistaken. I will accept that I'm mistaken. I guess. Yeah. Where?
When we first talked about it, because in the Rashi script, it says Yisbarach.
Instead of Yidbarach?
Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. That is interesting. Okay. I will grant that. But again, either Yidbarach or Yishtabach from the perspective of the content of the first principle is an irrelevant phrase. It's essentially the same as saying HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I were to refer to God and say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you wouldn't be able to build a philosophical discussion about why I blessed God at that moment. Because the expression HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One blessed be He, is an expression. It rolls off my tongue. It's like talking about God and saying Hashem, Yitbarach. You can't, so it's, he'll do that any time he refers to God. It's not necessarily a component of the principle itself. Understand the difference? So even though it's there, I'm not sure it's really more than tangential. Be that as it may, the animamin, I think, has a closer reflection of the text of the Rambam. And again, even though the Rambam didn't write it, ani ma'amin be'emunah shlema, first of all, the expression, ani ma'amin. Be'emunah shlema. That expression by in and of itself requires some attention. Again, going back to our definitions, if the definition of emunah means faith, it means belief, you either believe something exists or you don't believe something exists. It's hard to describe faith in either quantitative or qualitative terms. Whereas if you translate emunah as a form of trust, and there are levels of trust and levels of that relationship, and so you can talk about emunah shlema. Shahaboreit barach shemo. Again, that same expression, the Creator, blessed be His name. Manhig l'chol habruim. Bore u'manhig l'chol habruim. Created and leads all that is created. V'hu levado asa v'oseh v'yaseh l'chol ma'asim. And He alone made, makes, and will make everything. So there, at least, is a closer reflection to the content of this first principle. All right. Which brings us to principle number two. Does everybody have the source page? Hayesod Hasheni. The second foundation. Yichudo Hashem Yitbarach. Again, that same expression. Barach, we'll throw it in everywhere. It's not... just as I said, it's like saying HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The second principle involves Yichudo. Yichudo means oneness. I.A. Kaplan translated as unity, oneness, Yachid, Yichud, Echad, they all come from the same root. Klomar, Shena'amin, Shezeh Shehu Sibatako. That is to say that we trust that this one who, or this thing, which is the cause of everything, again, he can't define God in absolute terms, so he constantly refers back to a definition which is relevant to our frame of reference. He is the cause of our existence. This thing, this it, which is the cause of our existence, echad, is one. Ve'eno ke'echad hazug, he's not like one of a pair. If I have a pair of socks, and I have one of those socks, and I only have one, right? But I have one of a pair. So he's not one of a pair. Ve'lo ke'echad hamin, nor is he one like a species. V'lo ke'ish ha'echad, nor is he like one person, hamurkav, which is complex, shehu nechlak l'achadim rabin, because even a one-person entity, which is complex, can be subdivided into a number of elements. V'lo echad k'mo ha'guf ha'pashut, ha'echad b'minyan, nor is he one like the simplest physical thing. Shemekabel hachiluk ve'aprida le'ein sof, which is still infinitely divisible. Now the physicists would have a lovely time with that phrase. And the Rambam writes it in many places. He writes it here, he writes it in the Yad HaChazaka, he writes it in Mor Nevuchim, that anything physical is subdivided, can be subdivided infinitely. Physicists can debate that argument back and forth. I don't think the Rambam meant it in the scientific sense the way we understand it, which is divide things into elements and into molecules, into atoms, and then atoms into subatomic particles, and then subdivide those subatomic particles. I think the Rambam meant it just in theoretical, philosophical terms. I keep cutting something in half, as long as it's physical, I can cut it in half. and have something which is two parts smaller than what I had. Aval hu yit'ale echad be'achdut she'en k'mota achdut b'shum panim. But God is one in a way which is, in which there is no other oneness or unity like His in any way. V'ze ha'yesod ha'sheni mora alav ma she'ne'emar Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. This oneness, this principle of His oneness is defined or expressed through the pasuk that we say three times a day, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. What strikes us immediately? It's the first sense that we get from the Rambam's from this paragraph. Yeah.
He's not a catalyst.
That's true. Why would you say that?
First thing I think of when I think of there's only, you know, one unity is that it can't be subdivided. Well, all the time they talk about the different spherot, different dimensions of God, and He's not allowing that to happen.
Okay. I don't think they mean that there's multiplicity in the Godhead. I don't think the Kabbalists would entertain the notion that there's more than one God. I think the Kabbalists are talking about different manifestations of God's presence in the world, different expressions of the relationship, but we can get into a debate as to what the Sfirot mean, but I will accept that for the Rambam that would be problematic. The Rambam was not a Kabbalist. Well, he knew Kabbalah, but he wasn't a Kabbalist. Yes?
I think what strikes me is that every expression is in the negative.
Absolutely. Every definition here is in the negative. If I were to ask you, define for me, tell me what the Rambam's definition of oneness is vis-a-vis God, you couldn't do it. You could tell me what the Rambam's definition of oneness is not. And that goes back to what I said at the end of last week's shiur. The Rambam will constantly do this. Every definition as it applies to God is in the negative. Because the moment we say God is, we seem to be talking about something that relates to the essence of God. The statement God is places the conclusion of that sentence outside of our frame of reference. So if I say God is one, and I capitalize it with a capital O, that doesn't help me. I still haven't defined it, because one means many things. I have in this room right now one recorder. Is that what we mean when we say God is one? Numerically one? Conceptually one? Indivisible one? What oneness are we referring to? And therefore, in order to take it out of the frame of reference, we have no frame of reference. Any use of the number one in our frame of reference would be inappropriate vis-a-vis God. So I'm left with a non-definition. I'm left with a negative definition. One, God is one, but not in any way that you or I could possibly comprehend in a frame of reference what the word one means. Which leaves me with a quandary as to exactly what the significance of this is. If God is one, but not in any frame of reference that we can understand, so what's the big deal about this idea that God is one? Well, that's what we want to begin to explore.
Isn't it that God is unique? You know, that's the oneness. It's kind of like what you said before about how you can't say, well, something is very unique or not very unique. It's either unique or it's not. And Hashem is unique, and that's the oneness. It's not a question of it's not a question of enumerating.
Right.
It's a question of uniqueness.
But even the word unique is a good translation of the word echad, perhaps. But even that word leaves us with a number of possibilities. I can create an artwork which is unique. I couldn't, but I know people who could. I could have made an artwork that was actually very unique, but that's a separate issue. It wouldn't be worth anything, but it would be unique. Unique could mean simply one of a kind, but within the frame of reference that we exist. So I could describe, I could build a masterful idol, and it would be unique. But it wouldn't be echad in the sense of this principle. not only because it violates other principles, but because it's unique in a inside one of a kind. Whereas when we're talking about here, the unique that is completely outside of the frame of reference of anything we understand. And again, this goes back to the assumptions of principle number one. The assumption of principle number one is that if God created that which exists, then God is completely outside of the realm of any limitation of that which exists. Understand what I mean? Well, if God creates the physical universe, then he cannot be bound by the laws and limitations of the physical universe, which is, in fact, principle number three. We're going to get to it. That God is not physical in any way because God created all that is physical. But if he's not physical, and the Rambam will link these two, and I'll show you where he does so in a moment, if he's not physical, he can't be bound by any of the physical laws, then the notion of one has to exist outside of the realm of the physical creation. That's a hard concept for us to get our heads around because we have no frame of reference with which to give it a positive definition. So the Rambam gives it a negative definition. Not one of anything of which we understand. And yet he connects this seemingly abstract notion to a verse that we recite three times a day. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We say it at Shachas, we say it at Mayru, and we say it Kriyat Shema Lamita, and sometimes if you say Birchas HaShachar, you say it four times a day. On Shabbos, we say it five times a day because we say it in Kedusha and Musaf too. Not only does he say it's connected to Shema, the Rambam defines this idea of this oneness as a mitzvah, and in the list of mitzvot, if trust in God, knowledge of God is mitzvah number one, trust in and knowledge of the oneness of God is mitzvah number two. In importance, in significance. And that's exactly what the Rambam does in the Sefer HaMitzvot. Take a look at the bottom of the page. Mitzvah Bet. This is the quote from the Sefer HaMitzvot. The Mitzvah Aleph we saw when we read the first principle. The second mitzvah in the list of 613 mitzvot. Hu HaTzivui SheTzivanu BeHe'emunat HaYichud. This is the mitzvah commandment in the... And again, I will translate it as trust in the unity of God. And again, we have to ask the question of what trust is involved. I understand trust in God. What's the trust in the unity of God? Belief in the unity of God, maybe. But what am I trusting in when I trust in the unity of God? This prime cause of all existence, echad, is one. And that is what God, again, all of those expressions are always tagged on to any pronoun applied to God. And that's reflected in the pasuk of Shema Yisrael. And then he goes one step further and he says, I was just looking at the previous paragraph one second. Yeah, okay. Uberov ha-midrashot timtzaim omrim al menat liyached et shmi, al menat liyachadeini v'rabim ke'ela. You'll find in many expressions of rabbinic literature, medrash, Mishnah, Talmud, Gemara, many different sources in the primary sources of the rabbis, you'll find them using expressions such as Almanat liyached etchmi, for the sake of unifying my name, or in order to establish the unity of God. Almanat liyached etchmo. What does that mean? Ritzim bazeh ha-ma'amar. What they're trying to say in this is the following. Where are we? Okay. Front page. This was the first principle. I skipped the Yad HaChazaka piece, and I went to where it says Mitzvah Bet. Okay. What we're trying to say in this is follows. Amnam hotzi anu me'avdut. Indeed, God took us out of Egypt. And he did all those wonderful things that he did to us throughout our history. All for the purpose that we should trust in his unity. Because that's what we are obligated to do. And there's much to be said about the mitzvah of yichud, unity, unification, establishing the unity of God, recognizing the unity of God, and acknowledging this oneness. Before I read the next line, what has the Rambam essentially argued here? He said much more than just the fact that the second principle is that we have to believe or trust that God is one. What he's said is
it's actively doing
that somehow this is an active mitzvah. It's not just a function of what we think. Right? This isn't just to come back to the issue of belief. It's one thing to believe. This now has to be translated into some kind of lifestyle, some kind of action that demonstrates, that accepts, that acknowledges this principle. And it is significant. It's not just a tangential piece of information. This is so significant that it is, the Chazal talk about it often, that it becomes the very mandate, the very purpose of Yitziat Mitzrayim. The very purpose for our becoming a nation, says the Rambam, was for us to acknowledge not just that God exists, but that God is one. V'yikru'u gam kein zot ha-mitzvah. Now this mitzvah has another name to it, says the Rambam. If you want to know what stand what this mitzvah is, this mitzvah has another expression. And it is called Malchut Shamayim. Equals Malchut Shemayim. One equals the kingdom of heaven. Acknowledging, accepting the notion of God as one is essentially the same as acknowledging the concept of God as Melech. And when we declare God as one, we are declaring God as Melech. When we acknowledge that they are interconnected, they are essentially the same. Kihem omrim, as for example in the expression lekabel alav malchut shemayim, a person who accepts upon himself the kingdom of heaven. Ritzono lamar, when Chazal say that, what they mean is hahoda'a biyichud vehaemunato, acknowledgement of God's oneness and belief or trust in it. That's an equation that needs clarification. Why is there not only a jump from, it's not only a logical conclusion from the notion of Hashem Echad leads me to an acceptance of the king, of the notion of God as king. In fact, the notion of God as one is equivalent to the notion of Malchut Shemayim, often called Ol, Malchut Shemayim. You understand that the word Ol, or yoke, is a description, is not part of the essence of the concept. The yoke of the dominion of heaven means all that emanates from acknowledging that God is Melech, referring to the totality of the mitzvot. Malchut Shemayim means to acknowledge the authority of the king, the power of the king.
Why
does he say Shemayim? Malchut Hashem, Malchut HaBorei, Malchut HaGoel, it'll all be the same thing.
What's the rest of the world?
That's what I'm saying. It all means the same thing. What he means, Shemayim, means in the global existence, the king of the world, king of the universe, king of all existence. Vereshit bara Elokim et haShemayim v'et haAretz.
The equation is Yichud equals Malchut Shemayim and not Yichud equals all Malchut Shemayim.
Yeah, I just said that it's often referred to as all Malchut Shemayim.
They're two different things.
They are two different things. That's what I'm saying, that the Rambam doesn't include the word all. I don't think it's that. I think that that's intentional. In other words, but at the end of the day, my issue is what's the relationship between Echad and Malchut? How did the Rambam jump from the notion of unity to the notion of kingship? Here I understand the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. When I recite the mitzvah, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and I acknowledge God as one, says the Rambam, I'm acknowledging God as king, master, etc. Where is the connection? I'm going to do one more source before we start to try to make some sense out of this. The Rambam in the middle source on the page, Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, again, just to give you a sense of the language of the Rambam, from the same paragraph that we started with at the beginning of the first principle, the Rambam takes this piece of information from this first principle in the Perish HaMishnayot, translates it into halachic information in the Ilchot Yisodei HaTorah and the Mishnah Torah, and you'll see he does exactly the same thing that we just saw in Halacha Zayin, Perek Aleph Halacha Zayin. Eloh Azeh Echad Hu, this God that we just described as existing, is one. Ve'eino Shnayim, he's not two. Ve'lo Yetav Shnayim, certainly not more than two. El Echad, he's one. She'en ki Yichudo Echad min ha'achadim ha'nimtzim ba'olam. And he's not one like anything that exists in the world. Lo achad k'min shehu kolel achadim harbei. He's not one of a species. Lo achad k'guf, and he's not one like a physical being which can be subdivided. El yachid she'ein yachid acher kamoto ba'olam. He's one that is completely undivisible, that has no equal in the world. And here he connects it to what I said earlier. Ilu hayu elohot elohut harbei. Hayu gufin v'gviot. If there were many gods, if there was multiplicity in the Godhead, then there would be division between them, and to be division between them, there would have to be physical division between them. And since God is not physical, clearly there cannot be any kind of physical division. That's an argument from philosophy. We're going to skip the rest of that Rambam for now. Absolutely, that's what we said last week. That's exactly what I said. That
the mind is the same.
Absolutely, 100%. The Rambam will be consistently. That's why I introduced the issue of the Kuzari and connected at the end of last week's shiur, because I wanted us to understand that principle that the Kuzari establishes, which is that I can only describe God in terms that are relevant to a frame of reference that I have, is also accepted by the Rambam, albeit he goes back to a more global step. But the notion is I can't describe what God is, I have to describe what God is not. So here I have what seems to be like a positive definition, God is one, and then the Rambam goes out of his way to describe negatively what God isn't. What does this one not mean? And then he connects it to this notion of Malchut Shemayim. I'm left with, I mean, clearly at its core, what's the Rambam's issue here? What is the belief in this is monotheism. In other words, and monotheism came to essentially be contrasted with what's the opposite of monotheism?
Polytheism.
Right, polytheism, multiplicity, whether it be through idolatry or through paganism or through any other religious system that had more than one deity at its center. clearly at the heart of all of this is Avraham's the notion of Avraham's declaration of belief in one God. That certainly stands at the core of it. But I still think we need further clarification as to what the correlation is between the notion of acknowledging abstractly, philosophically, the notion that God is one, as that being so central, the principle, that it translates into the notion of Malchut Shemayim. What's the connection here? Not only is it connected to Malchut Shemayim, the Rambam defines it as a mitzvah. The mitzvah of Yichud Hashem, unity of God, declaring the unity of God. A mitzvah which the Rishonim and Achronim go one step further and say is so central to the essence of Jewish life that it is over this mitzvah and this mitzvah alone that Jews have given their lives to defend. Take a look, for example, on the third page. Come to page number 3. Take a look at the middle paragraph of the on the right hand side, Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch, which is a 16th century work, essentially follows the Rambam's listing of the mitzvot, only restructured according to the parshiot of the Torah. Whereas the Rambam, you know, it's like recreating chaos out of order. The Rambam took all the mitzvot in the Torah, which are scattered and haphazard, reordered them in a logical, structured fashion, came along the Sefer HaChinuch, and then he wrote a Sefer in which he took all the mitzvot of the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot and resequenced them back to the sequence of the Torah. Why did he do it? So the story that goes to, and I have no idea if it's true or apocryphal or what have you, but the story that goes with Sefer HaChinuch is that the author wrote it so that he could teach it to his son on a weekly basis. So that he could go through the mitzvot of the Torah and understand them and teach them according to the parshiot of the Torah as we have it, which is an interesting exercise because if you go through Sefer HaChinuch each week, so some weeks it'll take you a couple of minutes and other weeks it'll take you 6 months. So it's an interesting exercise. Be that as it may, this is Mitzvah Taf Yud Zayin. Mitzvah Taf Yud Zayin is a mitzvah of Yichud Hashem, the declaration of God's unity. Midinei HaMitzvah. The Sefer HaChinuch combines both the listing of the mitzvah together with a summary of the laws of each mitzvah. And there he writes as follows. Midinei HaMitzvah, of the laws pertaining to this mitzvah, Mashamu zichonam livracha, shechayav kol echad miYisrael lehareg al mitzvat yichud. And every Jew has to be willing to give up their life for the sake of the mitzvah of yichud shem shemayim, the unity of the name of heaven. Lefi shechol echad sheino mode biyichudo baruch hu, anybody who does not acknowledge his unity, Ki'ilu kofer bi'ikar, is tantamount to denial of the foundational principle of Jewish life. She'en shleimut ha-memshala v'ha-hod ela im ha-achdut ha-gamur. For the completeness of his mastery. And again, we get to that phrase. Right? What the Rambam calls Malchut, Sefer HaChinuch calls Memshala, rulership, mastery. Because this rulership and mastery is not complete, Ela al ha'achdut ha'gamur, unless you accept and understand the notion of this total unity. V'lev kol chacham lev yivchon ze. And the heart of all who are of understanding hearts will make this distinction, will understand this concept. I don't want. That leaves us a little bit. Leaves me a little bit intimidated, but all right. Ve'imken hare mitzvah zu michlal isur avodah zarah. Because If that's true, he says this mitzvah is composed, is part of the prohibition of idolatry. And over idolatry, idolatry is one of the three cardinal mitzvot for which a Jew is supposed to be willing to give up his life rather than violate. Those three cardinal sins are idolatry, adultery, and murder. Essentially, says the Sefer Chinuch, and the Rambam writes the same thing, although he writes it in different terms, is that this notion of unity of God is inherently connected to idolatry. If you don't accept, if you don't trust in this notion of unity, then that essentially is idolatry. And if Yehareg Vayavar is applicable to idolatry, then it's applicable to unity as well. We still have to explain or understand what this unity is, to what specifically is Sefer Chinuch referring to. I think he's referring, my guess is that I think he's referring to the story of Rabbi Akiva. How did the Rambam, what key verse, phrase, did the Rambam express, or say, expressed this mitzvah of Yichud Hashem? What is the source for it? Shema Yisrael. What's the famous story of Rabbi Akiva, to which the Sefer Chinuch is alluding? Anybody know to what I am referring?
When he was dying.
And as he was being taken out, as he was being executed by the Romans, he said audibly, what? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That story is in the Gemara and Brachas. I've given you the source on the page, right? Third page. Gemara Brachas Daf Samach Aleph. You have it, just below Sefer Chinuch. Story of Pamachad Gazra Machut Rishah Shelo Yasku Yisrael B'Torah. There was a time when the evil kingdom, which is a euphemism for the Romans, decreed that there should be no public study of Torah. Lo Yum Yamimu Atimat Shetafsuhu LeRabbi Akiva V'Chavshuhu LeBeit Asurim. They took Rabbi Akiva. They caught him teaching Torah, and they jailed him. When they took Rabbi Akiva out to be executed, it was the time of the recitation of Shema. And they were combing his flesh with combs of iron. Listen to the phrase. And at that point in time, he accepted upon himself the yoke of the dominion of heaven. How? What is the active mitzvah through which we accept the yoke of the dominion of heaven? Kriyat Shema. Amulo tamidav Rabbeinu Atkan, how far do you have to go? Amar lem kol yamayiti mitzta'er al pasuk ze b'chol nafshecha. All my days I was concerned about the mitzvah of b'chol nafshecha, serving God with all your soul. Afilu notel et nishmatcha, which means even if he takes your soul. Amarti matay avol liyadi ve'ekaymena. I was concerned when this mitzvah would come to my doorstep from the opportunity to fulfill it. Yachshev sheba liyadi lo ekaymena. And now that I have that opportunity, I'm not going to fulfill it. Meaning, of course, he was being executed. His execution was not in his hands to fulfill or not fulfill, but what was in his hands was to do so through the sanctification of God's name, or through the declaration of the acknowledgement of God's kingship, namely through the Shema. I am ma'arich be'echad ad shiyatza nishmato be'echad. And as he was being killed, he declared this verse, Shema Yisrael Hashem Akinu Hashem Echad, and he emphasized the word echad. It was ma'arich be'echad. Extended it, emphasized it, not quite sure what it means, but Pidur as it may, Yatzta bat kol v'yamah ashrecha lebekivish yatzah nishmatcha be'echad. And a bat kol, a heavenly voice came out and said, happy are you of Rabbi Akiva, whose soul was taken through at the time of the recitation of the word echad. So I think the Gemara itself hints to what the Sefer Chinuch and the Rambam essentially is saying, which is that somehow this notion of Kiddush Shem Shemayim, the sanctification of God's name, the acceptance of the yoke of heaven, the notion of Malchut Shemayim, is all connected to this key word. So that even at Rabbi Akiva's critical moment, when he was being executed by the Romans, it was that not just the declaration of Shema, it wasn't just emuna, faith in God, trust in God, that he was declaring. It was specifically trust in the oneness of God that was at the core of the issue. If you were to say to me that Rabbi Akiva was expressing the notion of belief, trust in God at that critical moment they were taking his life and he remained loyal to God, I could understand it. But loyal to a component of the philosophical description of what God is, that's the issue over which he felt he would give up his life, that's a quandary. That's a mystery. Understand my dilemma? So that's where we are, that's where we're at. So let's just quickly review the questions that we have. First question is, what does the oneness of God mean in terms of defining it in a negative sense? How can we understand this mitzvah of Yichud Hashem? Number two, why is it so significant? Why is it so important? Why is it so masterful that the Rambam connects it to the notion of Malchut Shemayim and the notion of mitzvat Kiddush Shem Shemayim, even Lamut al Kiddush Hashem, to give up one's life for it? And the third question that we're going to have is based on another midrashic source. Let's do that again. A third midrashic source, which I have not yet shown you. So now let's go back to the second page. The Medrash at the top of the page, Medrash Tanchuma, is on the pasuk of Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Otzitich Meretz Mitzrayim Mibeit Avadim. Lo yeh lecha Elohim Achrim Al Panai, you shall not have any other gods before me. So the Medrash is trying to understand the correlation between the phrase Anochi, I am, and the continuation of this Lo yeh lecha, you shall not have any other gods. Davar, what does it mean, Anochi Hashem Elokecha? Another interpretation. Lefi shenira'a lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu bayam ki gibor osem milchama. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to them at the sea as a warrior fighting war. After Kriyat Yamsuf, during Shirat Yam, when the people sang their song of acknowledgement to God, they declared Hashem Ish Milchama. God is a man of war. That was not to describe God as a man as much as it was to describe God who fought their battles by their victory over the Egyptian army. So God appeared to them at the sea as a warrior fighting their war. Then at Sinai they had a very different vision. They saw God like a melamed, like a school teacher. They saw God as a teacher teaching them Torah. Sofer melamed Torah. Nira'a lehem b'yimei Shlomo kibachur. In the days of Solomon, really an anachronistic analogy, but nonetheless, because this is the Aseret HaDibrot, we're talking about how they saw, what they saw or heard or experienced at Sinai. So to jump to the days of Solomon is anachronistic, but nonetheless, they saw God at the days of Solomon, kibachur, like a young man. And in the days of Daniel, they saw God as an old man. Amar lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to them, Lo kefi bishvil shehem ra'im oto dumuyot harbe. Do not be confused by the fact that they see God in multiple forms. Aniu shebayam, aniu shebesinai. I am the God at the sea. I am the God at Sinai. Anochi Hashem Elokech. I am the Lord your God. The Medrash is trying to understand the expression. What does it mean? I am the Lord your God. I Anochi Hashem Elokech. What is God trying? What's the chiddush in that declaration? I am. So Medrash says because they saw various manifestations of God. They saw a warrior at the sea, and they saw a school teacher at Sinai, and they saw an old man, and they saw a young man, and they had all of these visions of various manifestations. So God said to them, "Don't think that there are four different deities here." But in fact, there's only one, namely, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. In the Mechilta, this source is a little bit more explicit. If you take a look at the Mechilta, it goes into a little bit more graphic detail. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, lama ne'emar, lefish nigla layam ki gibor asem l'chama, shenema Hashem ish milchama. Again, the beginning is the same. They saw God at the sea as a warrior. V'niglal ha'sinai kizaken malei rachamim. And then at Sinai, they saw God as an old man full of mercy. As it says, they saw God, v'yu'ot alokei Yisrael, full of mercy. U'keshinigalu ma'u omer ke'etzem ha'shamayim la'tahar. At the revelation, they saw the essence of heaven. It goes to a whole series of psukim, which I'm going to skip. Go down a little bit more. Right below the line 25. Shelo liten pitchon peh l'umot ha'olam lomar shtei rishuyotein. In order to take away the excuse of the nations of the world, lest they say that there are two deities here, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. God says to them, I am Hashem the God, your God. There's only one deity. Ani b'Mitzrayim, it was I in Egypt. Ani al hayam, it was I at the sea. Ani b'Sinai, it is I at Sinai. Ani l'she'avar, ani latid lavo, it is I in the past, I in the future. Ani b'olam hazeh, ani b'olam haba, I in this world, I in the next world. And then a whole series of psukim related to the Mechilta. What does the Mechilta give me that the Tanchuma hasn't? It's given me, I believe, a key to a direction in terms of understanding what the Rambam is saying. The notion of oneness is connected not only to the existence of one deity, but also to... What is the Mechilta driving at? What's the issue here? It's connected not only to the existence of one God, but also to...
The actions may be different.
The manifestations of God in the world. If I use a term that we established back in principle number one, the relationship. And that relationship can change. That relationship can change. In one day, at one moment, in one generation, or at one epoch or era of history, that relationship could be seen or perceived in one way. And in another time, in another experience, that same God could be perceived differently, with a different relationship. When they saw God at the sea, and they saw something, they saw the revelation, they saw the splitting of the sea, they saw the Egyptian army being drowned, they saw the warrior of God. They saw God defending them in the midst of battle. They saw God protecting them. That was the relationship they had with God at that moment. Then they came to Har Sinai and they saw, quote unquote, a very different concept. Namely, they saw a teacher, they saw a lawgiver. Well, a lawgiver is not necessarily the same as a warrior. In our governmental system, we split those jobs. Right? It's called the separation of powers and checks and balances. We split the legislation from the executive precisely for many reasons. But when we talk about, because they are very different, they're different relationships. And you have to have a different relationship with your general than, or with your commander-in-chief, so to speak, than you have with your teacher, or scribe, or elder, or lawgiver. And they saw one manifestation of God at the sea, and they saw a different manifestation of God at Sinai. They saw a different manifestation altogether in Egypt, through the plagues and the experience of Yetziat Mitzrayim. I'll go one step further. The Tanhuma adds two components of the relationship with God that are not in the Mechilta. Mechilta spoke about the sea and Sinai. The Tanhuma went to the sea and Sinai, Solomon and Daniel, and said we saw God as a Bachur in the days of Solomon and a Zaken in the days of Daniel. Very anachronistic, because we're not talking about they're later than Yetziat Mitzrayim, but what essentially is the Medrash describing? Another two forms of the relationship between us and God, namely, what was our relationship with God in the days of Solomon? What defined our relationship with God in the days of Solomon? The Beis HaMikdash, the establishment, the building of the Beit HaMikdash, the building of the temple, and the building of the kingdom of Israel. In other words, if we looked at God, the relationship between God and Israel from the perspective of the status of the Jewish people, political status, economic status, we were at the greatest heights in every domain, economically, security, war. Solomon had the largest empire, not only because he inherited the land from David, but because he had established virtually a global hegemony of sphere of influence over the world. So when you looked at the state of the Jewish people, when you looked at the kingdom of Israel, and you know that, and you compared it to the relationship with God, you saw strength, vigor, youth. What was Daniel?
Old and tired.
Excuse me?
Old and tired.
Old and tired. What was the story of Daniel? Daniel is the leader of the Jewish people, spiritual leader of the Jewish people, after the destruction of that very temple in the period of exile in Babylon, in Babel. And you asked yourself, after the exile and destruction of the kingdom of Israel and the destruction of the temple, and you asked yourself, what was God? Where was God? What was the relationship with God? How easy it could have been to say, he's old, he's frail, or chas v'shalom, even worse, he died in the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. Something analogous to our modern equivalent of God died in the Holocaust. For them, the destruction of the temple truly was their equivalent of our Holocaust. Certainly in the global scale, if not worse. And so their perception of the relationship with God was fundamentally different. Zaken, old, feeble, impotent. The notion of Echad is a trust, and I come back to the same word that I spoke about before, is a trust that it's the same God. Whether you're in the days of Shlomo, the days of Daniel, or the days of Kriyat Yamsuf, or the days of Mamre Sinai, it's the same deity, it's the same God. The manifestations change. The relationship changes because we change, because circumstances change, because our lives change, but God at the core of it is fixed and anchored and complete. So Yichud Hashem is connected from our perspective to the challenge of Yichud. Let me put it this way. What makes Yichud Hashem difficult to challenge, it's very easy to say, I believe in one God. That's easy. I don't believe in two gods. I believe in one God. I don't believe in three gods. I believe in one God. That's easy. But to believe in the same God through 1948 as 1945, that's difficult. That's a challenge. That's Kabbalat Malchut Shemayim. To recognize ultimately that even though the circumstances can be dramatically different, the relationship can be different, I could see and perceive as if there's two different gods running the world. In fact, aren't. In fact, there's only one God running the world at any given time. And in all times. That, I think, is at the core of what the mitzvah of Yichud Hashem is all about. And that's why the Sefer Chinuch connects it to the notion of the story of Rabbi Akiva. Because there's no greater example of somebody who, at the moment when it was so easy to say, where is the God of Kriyat Yamsuf, and where is the God of Tiat Mitzrayim, and where is the God of the Exodus, and where is the God of all the miracles? Right, Rabbi Akiva, who is the scholar of the generation, who is the teacher of Torah to the generation, Rabbi Akiva is standing there being executed by the Romans for teaching God's Torah. How easy is it to say, where is God? Where God is a zaken. Rabbi Akiva's response is, Hashem, echad. It's that oneness that defines the mitzvah of Omer Chodesh Shemayim.
Is there anything in the use of the word anochi, the etymology or use of anochi?